Hey, Hani Glock here, CEO and founder of 4D Global and the host of the Growing Global with Hani Glock podcast. I know a lot about providing outsourced support to medical billing businesses. And if you want to learn how to transform your sales team from order takers to quota breakers, significantly increase your revenue, and create scalable sales systems, you should be listening to the Authentic Persuasion Show with my good friend, Jason Cutter.
Welcome to the Authentic Persuasion Show, a place where business and thought leaders come to weigh in on important sales-related topics that you can use in your sales career and life. I'm your host, Jason Cutter. My mission is to get your help in changing sales from something prospects fear to an act of service they actually seek out and appreciate. Whether you're in sales, leading sales teams, or own a business, I hope this helps you improve your selling effectiveness and you can go out into the world as an authentic persuader. Hey everybody, what's going on this episode of the Authentic Persuasion Show? My special guest is Hani Glock. Hani is a driven entrepreneur and a seasoned veteran of the medical billing business. So this is going to be a fun one. In 2002, she launched her first medical billing company serving hospitals and physician groups of all specialties. After 13 years, she sold that business to an established competitor. And then in 2015, she founded 4D Global, a medical billing staffing company located in India. And you might be wondering why I have somebody who's running a medical staffing billing outsourcing company on my Authentic Persuasion Sales Show. And you'll find out as you stay tuned for our conversation, because there's a lot she's going to share with us that I know because we're going to talk about it. Hani, welcome to the Authentic Persuasion Show.
Thank you, Jason. Thanks for having me.
So I know this is going to be fun. I just already know it. But I want to start out because I think it's a hilarious, funny story about how we met initially. It was last year and it was in July, and I remember that. And we met as a random encounter on a bus that was driving around Coronado Island in San Diego. And I was done with a meeting that I had for a client that was there, and I had some time to kill before flying home. And I hopped on the free bus that just drives around in circles and moves people around. And I just went on a little sightseeing tour. And then here's this woman with two kids, one in a stroller, and just dealing with these kids running around, eating, having fun on a bus, just trying to manage it. And then we started chatting, which was funny.
Yeah, that's hilarious. This was like the entertainment because we were in Coronado for the entire month of July and some of June. And so riding around the bus was like a big thing for my three-year-old son at the time. And that's all he wanted to do. Everyone wanted to go to the beach, but he wanted to go on the bus. And I'm trying to figure out who approached who. I don't remember exactly like what happened. You probably said something to me or I said something to you. Then we got into this conversation about what you do, what I do. Talk about the ability to schmooze two salespeople. Schmoozing. Like me, I consider myself to be the salesperson, the extrovert. And I probably was bored of being on vacation, not but my husband and my kids. It's just cool the way we connected. And then we kept in touch over these last few years. So
yeah. And I think it's funny because the punchline of the conversation was realizing that you deal with outsourced staffing in India. Obviously, it's more on the support side. And then I, as a consultant, work with call centers and have deal with outsourcing all the time. And it was just so wild where the world can get really small really quick, which is two random people on a bus on a nice sunny day in July, not from that area, and literally how those paths can sometimes come together. It just makes me smile whenever like I see you in LinkedIn and I think of like how we met. It's right. Just funny.
Most people do not see that whole side of me, the frazzled mom trying to bring kids controlled. Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah. Okay. So let's talk about sales. There's a bunch of topics we want to talk about, but I think the best one to start with and why you're here is because up until recently, you have been that extrovert salesperson for your organization, all the business development. You had a small team and was trying to grow them. Recently, you've made some I guess, significant milestones, leaps and bounds. But you're one of those founders who, yes, you're providing an outsourced operational service for your clients, but you're the one doing the business development. You're the one doing the sales. You're the one that's selling and, like you said, schmoozing and moving people through that. And then recently, what you've done is been able to build your team and mostly extract yourself from that sales role and not being the classic, which is the only or best salesperson on the team and having to carry the whole weight. So tell me or share with everybody that journey that you had and then kind of the tipping point, the evolution of all that.
Okay. In general, with my business, I always like to really understand something so well that I know how to do it so well that I could teach someone how to do it. And I did that in every area of my business and operations and client services and just all the different areas. And I thought I could do the same thing with sales. So I spent a tremendous amount of time immersing myself in learning about sales and marketing and everything related to that. And in retrospect, I should have not tried to do all that on my own and realize what my unique ability is. And there are people out there that are smarter than me that have done this before. And why am I trying to do this from scratch when I haven't done it before? And so that's the awareness I have now. Many years into that whole journey, I should have hired a sales director earlier, hired a sales team earlier. But at the same time, I had to have enough revenue to justify those additional costs. And so when the revenue was right and I knew I had the profitability that I had in the company, my company has no debt. I never wanted to go into debt to build. And so I've constantly taken the profits of the business and reinvested them. But the best investment I've made by far was hiring a sales director who could then hire a sales team and then take control of that entire piece of it. And for me to just back off and let him do his thing. So he decides who he's going to hire. He decides who he's going to fire. He decides what the metrics are. And it's his thing to really work on and perfect and improve. And he always has me as support, but it's kind of like just letting go of this whole thing.
I love that evolution. And I've seen other clients of mine do that in companies where they get to that point where they can do it. And share with me your experience on this, that I've also seen sales founders, right? Let's put that in that bucket, right? Not a technical founder, but a selling sales founder, where they try to do that too soon. They try like, okay, I need someone help. I'm just going to hire this director. I'm going to abdicate everything. I hope they know what they're doing. And for me, there's a certain point where either the documentation or the business or something needs to get to before you can truly hand off. What have you found? Was there times where you tried to do that and it didn't work and it kind of reverted to you?
So that's a good point, because handing it off too soon before you have processes in place, before you have the right PowerPoint brochures, materials, your sales team doesn't have anything and they need material. So I probably spent a year with my first salesperson that I hired, coaching her and having her develop what we needed to develop. And we created a very, very extensive training manual, because you can't create a manual before you have created the process. First, you have to figure out what works. Once you figured out what works, then you could document it, then you can delegate it. So we did spend a lot of time putting that stuff together. And then the onboarding process of each salesperson gets easier over time because you have this tremendous amount of information. But I will say it probably took us about a year to develop the training program. And only once we had the training program did we bring in the SVP and a fractional SVP of sales. An SVP of sales, we're looking at 125, 150 of a base salary. You have to have enough revenue to justify that person who's really not even selling, he's just managing the sales team. So we started with a fractional VP of sales. So he was working for us on an hourly basis, because you don't need a full-time person when you have a few people. You start needing that person all the time. And I said to the fractional VP, he said to me pretty early in the relationship, he says, I really do want to work for you full-time. I said, great. Make sure your sales team does well, that we have enough revenue to afford your salary and you'll buy yourself your job. And he was all about it. So he's driving hard to be able to get that full-time position. But yes, it does take time to gather the data, put together the training, and then the SVP will come in and see where the holes are. He helped us perfect our scripts. He helped us with our, he calls it a veto email, very important top officer email that we had to really break down and refine, or the different messaging. And now he's working on, you know, marketing strategies and so on. But I think you have to have a base. You have to have something there before you go all in.
I couldn't agree more. And I appreciate how you put that in order. What you said is you build the training, but you can't build the training until you have a process, and you can't have a process until you know what works. And I think the key is, because I know you well enough from our interactions and this evolution that you've made, even in a year and a half, right? So we met July of 2019, and here we are in December of 2020, where you were at then, in I guess August, September, when we really started chatting, that it wasn't just what works for you to sell. Because this is where I see founders struggle, is they take what works for them, not what would work for, I'm just going to call it, a normal salesperson, a normal human. Because a founder is bringing with them the weight of being a founder, a CEO, that title, that energy, that passion. It's their baby. Everyone thinks their baby is the cutest. They can sell their baby always the best. How do you get a second salesperson to do that? What works? And then capture that in the documentation.
Exactly. And it's a process. I think it's also about a founder understanding where their unique abilities are. So is my unique ability selling? Is that the, like, where my time is best spent? Or could I teach someone? Yes, I think I'm still really great at it. And I'll still come on to discovery calls when required. But where could I do even more and make a bigger impact by focusing my time there? And so that's when it becomes clear that you can teach someone how to do that. And everyone's going to have their own style, and no one's going to have exactly my style. And I wouldn't teach anyone to have my style, because my style is unique to me, and every salesperson has their way.
What ways do you think somebody could also fail as a founder, or what pitfalls did you avoid as you're going through this process with this director level person, this SVP, where other founders might make those mistakes? Like, what kind of advice, anything else that jumps out?
I think finding a team that is the right cultural fit. I found a very instant connection with the salespeople I hired. They were just very aligned. We were very clear about our focus, our mission, our vision, our values. And I think that the team that we have now really bought into that and really understood where I was coming from. I was really excited to work in the company. And I think that is the glue that keeps us all together, like a right personality fit, where we're able to joke around, because salespeople are a whole different breed. They're not like any other employee that you'll ever have. Like, they want autonomy. They want to work as little as possible and make as much money as possible. They just operate differently. And so what I've learned over this transition is that the reason why a lot of CEOs fail at managing salespeople is because they think that all their employees, salespeople, are going to drive as hard as they are. Most CEOs are very type A, very goal-oriented achiever people, and will push themselves to the limit. Now, if a salesperson had that personality, they would have started their own business. They wouldn't be selling for someone else. So they're not really CEO. They are people that want to make a lot of money. And again, I'm generalizing because everyone's different. But from my understanding is that that's why a lot of CEOs fail at managing their salespeople, is the expectation is not aligned. And so a good VP of sales will kind of, you know, he'll say to me, your expectations are a little up there. We could expect this from this person. And they'll be like, okay.
Yeah, I totally agree with that, because that's something I've seen with many, many founders, is they get frustrated or upset when everyone's not putting in the effort, putting in the time, putting in the heart and the concern, but it's not their business. And then the challenge is on the flip side, which is employees who look at, let's say, a founder or a CEO and say, well, they make so much money and that's not fair and I want to make more money. It's like, well, you haven't been there this whole time, and then you're also not putting in this effort. So there's a balance, like you said, of what they're being paid. And I love what you said too about the hiring and the finding people, and it just clicked, especially from a corporate cultural standpoint, which is everyone buys in and believes in the mission, the vision, the core values. Because the one thing I found is that the more that people are in alignment with that, the more they can handle the challenges, the struggles, the failures, the loss, the change, right? It's like, hey, we were doing this. That's not working. We got to start doing it this way. And if you don't have that alignment, people will freak out. If you have that alignment, everyone goes, okay, we'll just go row this direction now because we're on board.
Right. And another reason that I'm thinking about also is that as a woman, there's a limited amount of topics I could really talk about intelligently. But I did realize that one of my salespeople is super into sports, and he can talk to you about sports and all different types of sports. And that's an area that he uses a lot to connect to his prospects. And so he's got his own strength, and he's able to get people to play golf with him or take people to a game that I don't have that skill set. Like, I don't know anything about sports, I will tell you straight up. That's such a great asset to the team, right? That he's able to bring that type of bonding experience to our clients and our prospective clients. I love that. So I think it's understanding what a different, somewhat like a yin to your yang, or somebody that has a whole different way of connecting to someone that could really just enhance the relationship. So now, if I know a client is this type of sports fan, we can gift them better, we can understand them better because we have someone like that with that personality on the team.
And what's fascinating and obviously fits with what I focus on with a lot of people in sales is that authentic side, which is what's true for you, right? Not pretending to like sports, not trying to force that, right? Like, I know you well enough to know that if you tried to pretend you knew about sports or force that, it would be terrible. Like, it wouldn't work for people who actually know sports, and it wouldn't come across right, and you wouldn't be happy. And so you've got to stick with what you're good at and then go that direction as long as it's authentic. There's people who love sports. Perfect. People don't love sports. That's okay. You don't need that to be successful in sales and relationships. Just be your authentic self.
Exactly.
So one of the other things I know that you told me that you've kind of learned or you're working on as a process with the sales team, which is knowing when to push, how hard to push, when to back off, you know, maybe that a pressure, that accountability. Where has that come in? What have you learned over this evolution?
A lot into numbers, because a lot of sales managers are very metrics driven, and I'm a very metrics driven person in the company, and through all the years, 18 years of entrepreneurship, I've always really focused on numbers. But through listening to like the sales leadership podcast, which I listen to a lot, and understanding that it's really not all about the numbers, like the numbers do tell a story, but someone could be working a very large account and spending a lot of time on a big fish. And so that could equate to equal amount of business than getting a bunch of smaller clients. So I think it's really about understanding people's style, people's method. Like, one of our salespeople is very focused on these partner relationships and channel partners and developing those relationships, which have a longer sales cycle. And then some people are very focused on like just closing, closing, closing and selling. So I think it's important to understand people's styles and see how we can fit into your growth strategy.
So how do you manage that from the top, right? And for people out there listening to this who have that kind of diverse, focused sales team, or even if you're a salesperson on that, but how do you manage that when you've got to make it some level of objective, right? Which is KPIs and numbers that don't lie, like it is or it isn't, right? You're either winning or you're not winning on the scoreboard and the results, but then also being subjective, which is you're not winning now, but you will win. I mean, how do you manage those KPIs? What have you found are good KPIs in that diverse team?
So for KPIs, we look at number of calls and calls to conversations. So how many calls do I need to make to have how many conversations, and how many discovery calls do I have based on that, right? And then how many contracts went out and how many contracts were signed. We track free trials because we offer a free trial, and almost every free trial turns into a client. So those are the things that we look at on a weekly basis. We follow EOS, and we have a level 10 sales meeting every week, and those are the numbers that we look at very closely. We also share those numbers with the leadership team on a weekly basis. So I can see what the norms are based on all the people that are calling and emailing and LinkedIn connections and all this stuff. But at the end of the day, it's about how many closed contracts are there and how many signed clients are there. And it's competitive. You need that competitiveness between salespeople. I find them a good salesperson will be very competitive, and that's what you're looking for. So I always say you've got to have at least two strong salespeople that are constantly trying to compete against each other. And that happens organically because you're looking at a scorecard every single week, and one guy has 300 calls and the other guy has 50 calls. And you could see that the guy that made 300 calls has 10 contracts in the queue and he has a very full pipeline. So it's just super clear who's performing and who's underperforming.
And when it's that clear, it's great. I've also seen other times where there's the person with 300 calls, there's the person with 50 calls, and the person with the 50 calls has 10 contracts and the other person has five because they're playing a numbers game. Their conversations aren't good. It's not targeted. They're not converting well. They're more just playing a numbers game. Whereas if I call 50 people a day, maybe someone will say yes, right? So they're just hammering that mode. And then I've seen times where there's people, they make the 50 calls, but they're very strategic. They're moving relationships forward. You get them on the phone with somebody, they could have one call a day, and literally that will convert into a contract sent. And so it's tough, right? Because all these little metrics that different people play the game differently, the key is look at the scoreboard. What do you have? What's the ultimate metric for success? If you're not hitting that, work backwards and see, okay, are you doing enough? And is your strategy working?
Exactly. That's exactly it.
So then how do you, or how have you found to push the team, or when to push them and when not to push them based on those metrics, those strategies? Again, you have the channel partner focus, you have the short, quick transaction focused. What have you found works, doesn't work?
So luckily that I'm not doing this anymore, I can tell my sales director and he handles it. In fact, it's counterproductive for me to interfere. Right? Then it's confusing messaging, like who's really in charge here. So sales managers in charge of keeping on top of the leading indicators, not lagging indicators, but leading indicators of like calls and emails are very easy to see. We use HubSpot in our dashboard. And so you can really see the activity every day. And it's pretty simple for the sales manager to see. And every sales manager has their own style. Some like to punch them in the nose and give them a bloody nose, and some like to dangle carrots. So everyone has their own style of management, but I think it's up to the sales manager to push the team to get the results that they want. And so at this point, I'm out of it. And I'm so happy to not be there and to just look at the numbers and not have to make those hard decisions about who stays and who goes.
If there's one thing I know, it's that sales is full of failure. Even if you're a Hall of Fame level sales professional, you can make a great income despite losing more than you're winning. If there's one aspect of sales that most people fear, and what keeps a lot of people even wanting to get into sales, it's getting hit with objections. That is why I wrote my latest book, The Sales Consultant Guide to Overcoming Objections, Yours and Theirs. This is the first in my new series of short books, guides filled with what you need for helping you improve your selling effectiveness. No fluff, no long-winded stories, no filler to make it seem more valuable, just actual foundation-building strategies to help you become aware of the true nature of why your prospects bring up objections, the different type of objections, and then specific ways to overcome them that are universal to most any sales process, product, service, or style. Go to Amazon.com today and get your copy of A Sales Consultant's Guide to Overcoming Objections. Or if you'd rather, as a gift to the listeners of this podcast, email me at jason@cutterconsultinggroup.com and I'll send you a complimentary full version of it as my thank you for listening and supporting this show. So let's talk about that for a minute. For the owners who are listening, the founders, we talked about this right before hitting record, that I see this a lot. In fact, I have several new clients that are having me help them with that. I call it the extraction, right? So we're extracting the founder from the sales team because they're the only or the best salesperson, like you were for the longest time. Because I'm just fascinated. I want to hear you say it because I know you're excited about it. What is your focus now? What is life like extracted from all the sales pressure?
So it's actually a really, it's a relief on one hand. I did it because it's part of my habit, it's part of my routine, it's part of like what I did. When I woke up in the morning, I had a number myself of how many calls I needed to make and like what my activity was supposed to be. I read the Dan Sullivan book, Unique Ability, and I was trying to figure out what am I really great at. And I realized that I am good at building relationships. I have a podcast, which I love to do, and I love building relationships. I like being a thought leader. And I do enjoy building the culture. I'm really good at doing the culture thing, finding the potential in others. So I do that with my direct reports and operations and finance and the other people. So I'm really focused on staying in my lane as the visionary of the company. And we follow the, like I said, the EOS. And so I really am a true visionary. I am a creator. I like to create things. This is my second company. I'm sure there's another company in my future. It's what I enjoy doing. And so if I could put my energy there, and I've devised a plan of focusing, allotting enough time for my health and wellness. So I schedule workouts every day, meditation every day, time with my kids every day, time with my husband, all that stuff I have very set time for, because I think it allows me to be more creative if I have that quiet time. And I need a time to let my ideas percolate. So I find when I work out, when I have my alone time, where it's just me in my own head and I'm able to write and I'm able to get everything out of my head, I do come up with some great ideas, some terrible ideas, but it's a time for me to generate ideas. It's a time for me to work on my marketing, my strategy, all the different things that a visionary does. Now I have the time to do it because I have the right team. So it's a weird shift. It's kind of like watching your children grow up and letting them do their thing and not be a helicopter parent and interfere. That's kind of how I see it. And so I'm adjusting to this new parenting role, just knowing that I raised them and now they have to go make their own choices.
That is so funny. I've never heard that or thought of that comparison. I mean, yes, parenting, but not the helicopter parent. And there's also a good parenting style, which is love and logic, which is let them fail and learn and then kind of grow. It's the only way to do it. It's the anti-helicopter parenting mode, if you will. And yeah, that's fascinating. You got to do that. You got to step back. You got to trust. You got to let it happen. You got to let them fail. You got to let them learn the hard way and experience life and support and be a servant leader instead of a helicopter parent. So let's talk real quick about marketing, because that's the other side, right? So there's sales and there's marketing. Usually what happens in organizations, they're very like against each other. They're very much butting heads, especially operations versus sales and everybody. But I know for you, obviously it's about the marketing driving or being a part of that. Where have you integrated that with the sales team? How does that fit in? I know that you have a lot of different content strategies and ways that you are attracting clients and then bringing clients almost into the family. So how does that fit in with marketing and sales for 4D?
For a long time, I was in charge of the marketing and I still am the ideas of the content ideas. We have a writer. We have somebody that produces our podcast. We have emails every month, like newsletters for our prospective clients, and our podcast emails go out every month. So that's pretty much something that happens. And we pick a theme for each month and we just focus on that theme. And so the articles and everything's tied to that theme. And then we have our social media strategy, which is my LinkedIn. I'm very active on LinkedIn, as you know. That's really my space for, I would say that 80% of my LinkedIn connections are prospective clients or existing clients. So these are people that one day going to do business with me or are already doing business with us. So I have my own strategy for being a thought leader and providing value in my own entrepreneurial journey, because I think people really want to be inspired by other people's journeys, and sharing the journey I think is important. And so I like to share that. But then we have our Facebook strategy, Instagram strategy for the India side to get top talent and for people to see what we're doing on the culture side, our core values, all of that is all Facebook and Instagram is devoted to the employees, and our clients as well like to see what our employees are up to. So that's kind of how we've used social media. a lot about building relationships for the long term. So keeping in touch with people that send this business and having gifting strategies. I'm into just long-term relationships because a lot of our clients have been with us for many years. And because I've been in this industry, I've been an entrepreneur for 18 years, but I've probably been in healthcare for like 25 years. So there's just a lot of relationships that I just try to maintain through social media and staying active on social media. As far as marketing, the goal of marketing is to get inbound leads and to have enough leads to keep sales busy. So our goal is to get at least 1,500 new leads every month. And we do that through LinkedIn Navigator. And we do that through our business development team. We have a business development team in India as well. And so right now that's our strategy, but it's constantly evolving and we're constantly working it, tweaking it, improving it. You're never done with marketing because you constantly need to innovate and pivot and learn how to do new things.
And I know that I know that I know that with your team, with your company, since it is focused on the mission, the vision, the core values, and everybody that's on board, I know is on board all the way. Like they're bought in the vision. They want to go where you're going, that everything works together, right? And I think that's the key. And I mentioned that because there's a lot of companies where it is divided and people are rowing their own directions versus like, okay, marketing is feeding this, sales is feeding this, this is feeding that. Like there's no one thing that's more important. It's all part of the whole being, right? The whole success.
It's interesting that you say that because just this morning we had our 2021 goal setting meeting and it was all different departments. Every lead from every department was on that call and we did a SWOT analysis and we put all this information on a whiteboard and we really had to figure out what are the important things that we need to focus on. But it was very, very much a team effort. So even though our marketing strategy was one of the things that one of the items or lead gen was one of the items, but it was kind of a team effort as to what everyone's going to do, even though one person's responsible, but we do have a lot of participation from the entire team. And the objective is that with each one of the initiatives of think priorities that we're going to do in 2020, there's one person that owns it, but that person that owns it has to gather their own team to execute on it. And so I find that with that strategy, there's a tremendous amount of collaboration and people stepping up and offering to help out is what really creates that kind of great culture. When people feel like they really want to accelerate and they really want to be part of the growth trajectory, so then I don't have this issue with having departments very siloed because we have a daily huddle every single day, 15 minutes every day, everyone jumps onto Zoom. And so we talk about everything, very transparent. Marketing, sales, knows what operations is up to, knows what client services is up to, knows what finance is up to. There's no secrets. Everything's out there. So I think people appreciate that.
I love it. That's a great model for anyone listening. If you're in an organization running one, you're setting one up, or you're going through any transitions to make that the goal, I think what you said is perfect. So for the sales side, before we leave that topic here in just a minute, what is it that you have found is a top, let's say, trait, skill, personality, behavior of top salespeople? Like somebody who you see as successful in sales?
Great question. We do these DISC assessments before we hire anybody. I like to hire high eyes for those that are familiar with DISC, outgoing, friendly, social, and somebody that has good habits because it takes a lot of discipline to execute. And a good salesperson has to build those habits. So somebody that works out every day shows their commitment to doing something every day. Someone that is competitive, athletic. I've always found that athletes were really great performers. And I've had some really good persuaders too. Like there's a culture index assessment that I've done sometimes, or strength finders, where sometimes people that are good persuaders are really good salespeople. So that's what comes to mind on qualities that I've seen that work. I'm sure there's others, but that's what I've seen so far.
I love it. I think that's a great Obviously, it's from what you've found works, especially with what you're selling. But I think that's some good insight. So let's shift a little bit. What do you think of when you hear the word authenticity?
Just being real and being honest. And I think social media has people creating all these facades about themselves, or people just showing one picture of their life that's perfect. And I really just like when people are real, when people are candid. I think we're shifting into, in the next 5 years, we're going to see a shift. We're already seeing it. Like, a lot of people are just being more authentic overall, just being more real about who they are, what their struggles are. Sales is all about know, like, and trust. And part of getting to know, like, and trust is if you seem so picture perfect and everything's so amazing in your life, then I can't really relate to you because no one's like that. And so yeah. If you're vulnerable and you're able to show your flaws or the things that you're working on, I just think that makes you more likable. And I think it's very important in sales to be a likable person. So that's what I think about authenticity. Just real, likable.
Love it. And then what do you think of when you hear the word persuasion, and where has that fit into your success in sales and business?
Grant Cardone comes to mind here with, what does he say? Like, sell or be sold. We're always selling and we're always persuading in some way. We're trying to convince someone to do something. I think persuasion, the way I like to see it, is I want to be able to help someone with a problem. I want to solve something. So I'm not going to persuade you to work with us if you're really happy with your current vendor and things are working well for you. I don't want to persuade you because I don't think that's in your best interest, right? But if I know that you have a problem and I can solve it and I could add value and I can create peace of mind and I could create a better life for you that you don't even know that you could have by working with us, that to me is authentic persuasion. I'm persuading you to do something that I think they authentically feel is for your benefit.
Absolutely love it. I'm going to make a note of that one. That's the best commercial for authentic persuasion yet. So you have a podcast, Growing Global, and I'm just curious. We didn't talk about this in advance, but what are some lessons you've learned from that? Any good things that come from that where you're like, oh yeah, this is a good gem. Here's something that would help sales, marketing, business leaders.
Oh my gosh, I've learned so much. The whole podcasting thing, as I'm sure you know, like when we started it, we were just, hey, let's just start a podcast, see what happens, right? A year and a half into it, or however long it's been for me, it's opened so many doors to speak to people that would have never spoken to me and that I've never have gotten even a minute of their time, but were super generous with their time. And I've learned a tremendous amount from each one of my people that I've interviewed. And it's part of my entrepreneurial journey. You are asking me to pick one thing I've learned from every single podcast.
Well, no, you don't have to do that. I mean, I think what you shared is good. And if anyone put me on the spot, I wouldn't have an answer either. But I just wasn't sure if there was anything that jumped out where you're like, overall, maybe a common theme that you hear from people.
A common theme as it relates to, because, you know, Growing Global is about global entrepreneurship. It's really about how to leverage the global economy. And you and I have talked about the power of a global economy and the power of leveraging the talent around the world, I think is something that is picking up, especially with COVID. It's definitely fast forwarded that whole thing, because why would I, you know? So I think just bringing that whole concept to light and making people understand that they're not just limited to the people that live in their geographic city or within 10 miles of their office, but you have a talent pool all over this amazing world we live in. And if I can just open people's minds by talking to different people that are already doing this successfully and are happy to talk about it, because some people are doing it and they don't want to talk about it because it's like, shh, don't tell anyone I'm doing this. It's my little secret. Right. And great, but so many people have that secret, like, don't tell anyone. Let me just pretend that Americans are doing this, but really I'm making huge margins, but my clients don't know. And so I think just getting that message out there to say, hey, there's a big world out there with a tremendous amount of talent. And look at all these entrepreneurs that are doing that and doing it successfully. That can open someone's eyes and just It's all about increasing your quality of life as an entrepreneur. I remember the days of being stuck in the grind for years and having a terrible quality of life to now living my best life ever. And so I really just want to put that message out there that you too can live your best life if you are learning and understanding what you can do to improve. And so that's really my whole premise of all the people I speak to. Everyone that I speak to is teaching me something new or will teach my listener something new about what they can do to develop as an entrepreneur.
Absolutely love it. That's great. Shifting one more time, what was it that you wanted to be when you grew up?
I am very artistic. I, in fact, create a little art studio right behind me. I just loved art and it's part of my creativity. So I really wanted to be a designer or an artist. I want to be a fashion designer. But you know what? I'm creating in a way that I never thought I would create. So I encourage my kids to dream big dreams and they could be anything that they want to be. And that's really what I was raised to believe by my mom specifically. She said, whatever you put your mind to do, you will be excellent at. And so
here we are. Yeah. What does success mean to you? How do you define that?
Success is when everything in your life is humming and balanced. So when your marriage is great, when your kids are happy and healthy, when you're financially secure and you don't worry about where your money is coming from. And when you live in a abundant mindset and when you're living in a place of awareness, constant self-awareness, understanding who you are, where you are, what your contribution is to this world, doing the work you love that it doesn't feel like work. That's living your best life for me. So making money, but doing the things that you love to do.
Love it. Last question, the journey or the destination?
All about the journey. All about it.
All right. So for everyone listening or watching this, so your company 4dglobalinc.com, so they can go there. Obviously, if they're in the medical billing space or they need help with medical billing outsourcing, that's what you do. You're very niche, very focused, which I love. They can find you on LinkedIn. So it's Connie Gluck on LinkedIn. And then your podcast, as we were talking about, so Growing Global, you can find that everywhere. And I've seen some of the guests, I've listened to episodes. And if anybody is running a business or wants to expand and look at what others are doing in the global landscape as entrepreneurs, it's a great show. So Connie, thanks for being on the Authentic Persuasion Show, joining me, sharing all this stuff and kind of going full circle with our random bus encounter to here on the podcast.
Thank you so much, Jason. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for tuning into the Authentic Persuasion Show. If you found value in this episode, please do two things. Subscribe so you can get each new episode and share this episode with anyone else you know in sales. Together, we can help shift the way sales is done. And if you want to find out more information about how to transform your sales career, or you want help with shifting your sales team from order takers to quota breakers, go to jasoncutter.com. Don't forget that everything in life is sales, and I will catch you on the next episode of the Authentic Persuasion Show.